So our final prisoner, Dr. Robert Grock. Dr. Grock worked for the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation as the Alaska State Veterinarian. He's responsible for animal health regulations, animal disease surveillance, manages the state fish monitoring program, and is a state fish advisory program coordinator. Dr. Grock received a BS in veterinary science from the Pennsylvania State University and graduated with a Doctor of Veterinary Medicine from the University of Pennsylvania. Markham.
Thank you. This presentation will be a little bit different. It's based on our collaborations with the other state agencies to evaluate contaminants in the state. And basically, the program was set up in 2001 to evaluate surveillance monitoring contaminants in fish. And we do know that it's a complex issue up here. We have a variety of sources of environmental contaminants from site-specific, like what Stacy was mentioning with our contaminated mine sites or old mining sites. And we do see quite a bit of regional differences there, which can be associated with either geologic deposits or with long-range transport issues. And the One Health aspect comes from the impact of contaminants on the ecosystem in general with respect to water quality issues, animal health, food quality, public health issues, and then overall economic impacts, especially in some of these remote communities. And there was a need for monitoring to determine some background to go ahead and look at comparisons across the state. And one thing that we do work very closely with is with Stacy and Dr. Hamadeh with respect to issuing our fish consumption guidelines. And, you know, just to put it in perspective with, you know, Stacy was talking about and working in Alaska, it's an extremely large state with respect to distances and remote access to a lot of these villages, and with a very diverse population spread out throughout the state and relatively small population. And we've discussed this a number of places about the sources. We've got our natural geologic sources up here, especially for some of the metals and mercury with respect to our natural geologic sources. The Southwest is an area that is a high mercury area, a large number of cinnabar deposits. We've got our forest fires, which will end up releasing that mercury up into the air, as well as we have volcanic eruptions. We're part of the ring of fire, and so there's a number of active volcanoes that we continually get dispersion of those contaminants there. We also have, obviously, our cities and industrial production, some military sites scattered throughout the state, and then our extract resource areas for mines and oil exploration. But our biggest concern, I think, from the standpoint is our long-range transport, especially with our organic contaminants. We've got the ocean currents that were discussed initially there through the Pacific Rim or the Pacific area, and then migrating up into Alaska. And then we also have our atmospheric and this is just a modeling that we'll go ahead and talk a little bit later, showing that emissions coming in from Asia into Alaska. And we also have our animal migrations with fish and marine mammals, as well as birds, coming from those temporal areas where they may be exposed and then coming up to the state, and then obviously some commercial transport of goods and services. And these compounds are what's been discussed in the past. They are bioaccumulative and they biomagnify in the food chain. So even though we may find small contaminant concentrations in environmentally, they can have some repercussions upstream. So we started off with a general survey of Alaskan fishes, and the state, basically this was a funded program through a number of different grants. And just recently we've got some state funding to go ahead and continue this, but it was operated on pretty much a shoestring. So it was very important for us to have collaborative efforts with our state and federal agencies across the state, as well as commercial, recreational, and subsistence fishermen. We could go ahead and send sample material out to them, have them collect according to our standard protocol, ship samples back, and then use what money we did have to go ahead and analyze these samples and try to go ahead and develop some kind of background database. We did select a number of coastal sites around remote villages adjacent to some of these anthropogenic sites, and as well as historic mining sites. And the idea then, I said, was to go ahead and evaluate initially skinless fillets to go ahead and look at human exposure to these contaminants, but we've expanded this program almost right away to go ahead and analyze whole fish to look at the ecological exposure of the contaminants that we've been have found. So the data was used specifically to go ahead and to address our fish consumption issues. There were no recommendations other than to eat as much Alaskan fish as you wanted, and we had a number of concerns from the EPA and other federal agencies about this this recommendation without having data to back it up. And so in 2014, Dr. Hamadeh in Public Health just updated our consumption recommendations. We issued the first set of recommendations in 2007. So the target analytes for the program are listed up there. There were heavy metals, specifically focusing on mercury and doing some methylmercury analysis, but organochlorine compounds for PCBs, dioxins, furans, organochlorine pesticides, and then we were looking at emerging contaminants as well as brominated fire retardants, the PFCs, and then have branched off in doing some pharmaceutical and personal care products. This is an overall distribution of our over 9,000 samples that we have. We've actually collected some down in the Pacific Northwest as a comparison, and we'll go and look at some of that data later. But there was some from freshwater, and then the Arctic, Bering Sea, the Aleutian area, and then Gulf of Alaska. If you go to a website, you can go ahead and see, we just really happy with this, just got a GS map put up that lists all the location sites. Then you can go down and get down to a specific area to actually see locations where samples have been collected and sent back for analysis. It's been very good, and you actually can access then the data results from those specific sites. We have over 54 different species that we've of fish and shellfish and invertebrates that we've analyzed. We've also looked at some sediments as well as some water samples. And these range from commercially important species to ecologically important species like the sculpin and stickleback, which are basically located in a number of streams and freshwater areas across the state that we can use for comparison as an index or an indicator species. I'm going to just talk a little bit about mercury because that's the main fish consumption issue with respect to the United States. And we do know that the transportation and creation in these energy-producing sites gets up into the atmosphere and can stay up in the atmosphere and range for quite a distance. And in its inorganic state, it's not until it gets deposited down into a water environment, into wetlands, that can go ahead and get methylated by sulfur-reducing bacteria, and then that's when the danger starts. It gets into the food chain and migrates up the food chain, and we all know that fish is the primary exposure route then for mercury to humans. The good news for us was this was just great. We looked at seeing hardly any or very low levels of mercury in most of the species of fish. But as we'd expect, we did see in some of the higher trophic level fish or higher predator fish that we did have elevated levels. And so public health has got together a scientific review committee to go ahead and look at this data that we had as well as other data collected across the state to go ahead and update our 214 acceptable daily limit intake for fish and mercury. We had at that time period about 8,000 samples or data points that were used to go ahead and establish those. And the thing that we were trying to do is not just look at it from exposure to a toxin or a contaminant, but to realize that how important fish is in the state with respect to nutrition, local economics, sport, culture, and community, religion, and identity as a people for a lot of the native subsistence communities. And we go back to the native subsistence mostly because of the large amount of fish consumed by a lot of native Alaskans, where the U.S. average may be about 14 pounds per person per year. We're looking at some of these communities consuming anywhere from 200 to 400 pounds of fish per person per year, and some estimates higher than that. So even though we have low mercury, if someone's eating that much fish, is this a concern and a problem? And like I said, the whole outlook was to go ahead and try to balance this with respect to a toxin versus the very good aspect of a wonderful nutritious source, having people get out and work within their community to go ahead and work together to harvest these fish, process these fish, and just the exercise and culture associated with it. And then with respect to their subsistence, relying on local foods that they have there rather than going to the store and buying processed foods, which was considered a risk. The guidelines are posted, but what they tried to present the recommendations was based on this point system. So we said eat 12 points of fish consumption per week, and then there, as you can see, our unrestricted fish that we're still saying eat as much as you want is a fairly significant number of species there. And it's only when you get into the larger predatory fish, like the halibut, yellow-eyed rockfish, or salmon shark and dogfish, spiny dogfish is a type of shark, not often consumed, but to go ahead and be cautious of consumption. So the follow-up on this is, even though we're making these recommendations based on these calculations, the Department of Health came back and followed up with respect to doing human biomonitoring. They've worked with doing this hair sampling to go ahead and evaluate mercury levels in hair, to go ahead and determine if there is exposures in some of these. Dr. Berner, who talked first, works with a lot of the native communities as well as doing cord blood mercuries and evaluating that. With respect to the hair mercury, the samples are sent back. It's a free program to go ahead be analyzed at the state lab. The results are sent back to the primary health provider as well as to the patient themselves so that follow-up can be done. And Department of Health and Social Services will follow up on any sample that is greater than 5 part per million so that we can go ahead and identify and see if there is a problem. We had one interesting case of a consumer down in southeast Alaska that did have quite high level of mercury in the hair. As it turned out, when they went down to do the interview with this woman, she said, "Oh, I eat a lot of fish." And then it was like, "Oh gosh, this is great. Eat a lot of Alaskan fish and you have a high mercury." As it turned out, she was eating a lot of fish that she was being sent to her from her native community back in Africa, a lot of dried fish. And so it was a very interesting, and it presented a unique aspect for our office as animal health issues to say, you know, gosh, this isn't maybe the best thing to have imported into the state with respect to other animal disease issues. We have expanded in the last couple years with respect to the addressing public concerns to Fukushima. There was the Department of Public Health went ahead and developed this interagency committee to look at interaction with other Pacific states, Canada, federal agencies, and tribal agencies to go ahead and look at what data was there from the release and what was being monitored in the state, presenting that to the public. And what we still heard back was that we don't care. We don't want to know we want to know that you're analyzing local fish to go ahead and tell us that it's safe to eat them. And so initially, the first 3 years, we worked with the FDA to go ahead and collect Alaskan fish and analyze those fish, and then get the results out that we posted on our webpage. Our program went ahead and developed the sampling program to look at specific species in different areas of the state, have samples collected early in the season and late in the season, according to the commercial harvest. And then we posted those results on the webpage, which presented just the hard data with respect to all non-detects related to any Fukushima-related radionuclides, and then listed specifically the minimum detection concentrations. And as to try to go ahead and make this a little bit easier for the public to consume, went ahead and tried to illustrate then the FDA intervention level for radiation for 134 and 137 and where our fish were below this minimum detection limit. And that seemed to help quite a bit with respect to easing concerns about that. and it's still going on. This year we've expanded and worked with the FDA. It's a fantastic pilot program we're using, is that they've developed a portable gamma counter that they've brought up to our environmental health laboratory, that we now, instead of collecting fish and then shipping them all the way to Winchester, Massachusetts for analysis, we can go ahead and process these fish, analyze them here, send the data back to FDA lab for evaluation and final results, and have a much faster turnover in getting data back. And this is the pilot project, hopefully to be used in a lot of other fern labs with respect to maybe use in the case of a radiation incident. And so Public Health then came out and said, you know, what are the risks associated with Fukushima? No appreciable risks. And like I said, we're still going through and having answer some questions as the topic continues to be elevated. And the last thing I was going to cover with respect to our long-range transport and our concerns up here is just the fact that we have a lot of these contaminants are coming up and not just affecting people because of the access up the food chain to the food, but they're also impacting our ecosystem and then our resources in the state. And the fishing industry is an extremely important part of the state industry with respect to the Alaskan fish. Provide about 55% of the overall fish that are consumed in the lower 48. And so that it is a large, important industry with respect to having sustainability and being able to go ahead and show quality product. And we go back to the mercury issue with respect to the atmospheric releases and the concerns with respect to deposits in the state up here. When you look at mercury emissions across the globe, you have certain hot spots, South Africa, but the biggest, most significant one is Asia, and specifically China. In a 10-year time period, China has built over 1 million coal-fired power plants and is burning coal at a very high rate. The coal that they do have there is very poor quality coal with a number of contaminants. I think it was about 10 years ago, with burning some of this coal, they identified the first case of inhalant arsenic toxicity and mortality associated with that. So this is really a concern. Going back to the mercury concentrations, atmospheric, showing during July 2001, it varies a little bit. This plume varies a little bit as you go through different seasonal changes. But predominantly, it's right dropping right up here in the Bering Sea and some right into the Gulf of Alaska. And so we have these concerns now, and we went back to look to see what do we have to compare that to, and we found a study that was done by NOAA, Hall and ETAL in 1976, where they, working with the International Pacific Halibut Commission, which is one of our collaborators, looked at skinless fillet of halibut across the coast. And what they did was they found, and graphically represented here, very relatively low concentrations of total mercury, and as we go down south, down to the Pacific Northwest, a significant elevation through that time period. So we took all of Hall's data and all of the halibut data that we had, over 2,000 samples of halibut that we collected. And in many cases, we were collecting samples opportunistically with a lot of our samplers. Somebody was out, they were going to get fish, we could go ahead and get some. It was a little bit different with the Halibut Commission. They were very interested in working with us, and basically were trying to go ahead and collect some commercially harvested fish so that would be representative of what's hitting the market and getting some data. So when we compare all the fish that we have to all of Hall's data, I apologize for that. I wish that I had chosen better colors, but I was a little bit computer limited last night when I was finishing these up. But Hall's halibut data shows the general progression down the coast to the Pacific Northwest, and what we can see is a significant increase, and especially in the Bering Sea, upwards of certain areas anywhere from 50 to 100% of what Hall's data were, where we're looking at data in through the Gulf of Alaska and southeast here. is about a 20% increase in concentrations. And surprisingly, down in the Pacific Northwest, we're actually seeing a decrease in mercury concentration in those halibut. And that probably has to do with a fisheries issue and over-harvesting down there and then not having animals harvested for quite some time. But our primary concern is when we went out and Hall didn't sample out into the Aleutian Islands here where we did, and we saw an incredibly sharp increase in the mercury, which presented quite a bit of concern for the state. And so what we decided to do was take the data. Instead of comparing all of Hall's data, we decided to go ahead and take the smallest, their smallest group of halibut from 2 to 27 kilos and use our data to go ahead and look at that. That gives us a little bit better representation because the fisheries issue is that as food chain has been limited for halibut in some cases, and so we're seeing them grow at a slower rate. So their size at age has been decreasing fairly significantly over the last 10 to 15 years. Anyway, this just greater accentuates our concern with respect to a lot of this global transport. And it's not just the mercury that's coming in through these emissions to the state. We're seeing increases in certain organochlorine compounds as well that gives a great concern with respect to products and issues in the state. And so I more just wanted to go ahead and finish up with one last comment that we are trying to go ahead and work with our collaborators to get this data. And we have kind of the easy job and the fun job, other than I can't go out and catch fish myself, is that we just then take the data out to collaborators to actually figure out what it means and what it's doing. So thank you. The question was, are we looking at wildlife exposures? And we are working with U.S. Fish and Wildlife and USGS with respect to that. And because there are established levels of exposure that they feel are an issue. And it's become more of an issue on the East Coast where they found elevated levels of mercury in songbirds. And they found direct effect of their reproductive fecundity, so that there are decreased number of eggs laid, abnormal behaviors that the parents aren't feeding the young, aren't caring for the young, so decreased number of not only hatchlings but fledglings as well, and so that there's some significant issues with respect to that we're working with other agencies on. Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Especially thank you for everybody who presenting, Dr. Kathleen and then the three presenters from the Alaska Health Department, Stacy and Dr. Bonner and Dr. Grock. Thank you so much. And I forgot to introduce myself. This is Miki Shin from the Environmental Health Tracking Branch. Thank you.